Now we'll turn to some questions from the audience. See if I can grab something interesting. The first is from Loretta at Lutheran World Relief. She asks, how applicable is connected farmer to cooperatives as they have an agribusiness function of bulking, collective input, et cetera? Mike, do you have some comments on that?
Sure, thanks, Judy. So I think they're very applicable to cooperatives. And two of the businesses we're actively working with right now, one of which is signing a contract, are dairy cooperatives. And I think your point around the active aggregators is exactly right. They are in many ways an agribusiness in the sense that they source from smaller farmers, they provide some services to those farmers. What's interesting, I think, with cooperatives, particularly dairy cooperatives in Kenya, is that many of them have over time created SACOs or financial institutions linked to the cooperatives. And in there, the value of connected farmer might not totally be the mobile money aspect of it, but it might be more around the transparency of it, of the transparency of the transactions. So we've seen in dairy in Kenya that one of the key values of our solution is these daily receipts that go to dairy farmers who deliver their milk to the cooperative. And in the old world, they would deliver milk every day, but they wouldn't get any confirmation of how much milk they've delivered. And at the end of the month, they would get a consolidated statement saying, you delivered this much milk over the past month. And if a farmer thought there was a discrepancy in between what they delivered and what they were getting paid for, it was very hard for them to address that. And so what the solution has done now is give a farmer a daily SMS receipt around the amount of milk that's been delivered. So every day the farmer can say, it gets the receipt saying, today you've delivered 10 liters of milk. And so if there's a discrepancy, they can find it that day and address it. So I think this solution becomes really interesting for cooperatives, those without linked financial institutions and those that happen to have financial institutions as well. They also become very interesting in many of these cooperatives will actually run small shops or give farmers product on credit through a top-up system is how we think about it in Kenya. And the system can help manage those loans to farmers, that credit to farmers, and also that top-up system. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to make one other comment about the alliance. We were, one of the side benefits of the alliance was that we were hoping to use it as an example for learning for other mobile network operators. Clearly, 80% of the population in Sub-Saharan Africa is in farming, so mobile network operators are interested in that market and figuring out how to get into it. Vodafone, of course, has stepped out ahead with this alliance, and we see others, Airtel and Aurora, for example, moving into mobile ad services as well. Clearly, they're not copying Vodafone, but I think it's good that these different operators can watch each other and see that momentum is actually increasing across mobile network operators for mobile ad services. But we have a question from Nina at the World Bank, and Mike, I think this is for you again. She asks, what is the role of the national government where CSA is operating in terms of implementation? For example, to which extent was it involved, were there any regulatory or policy obstacles to the implementation of the project?
Great, thank you. So for our project, we haven't done a lot of direct engagement with the government. Part of that is because the local opcos in each of our markets that already have a license to operate are already doing value-added services. And so it's not though a new entity doing something kind of brand new. We are piggybacking in many ways on the relationships that Vodafone and their opcos already have with the government. I think what gets interesting is that some of these solutions can be useful to the government. And we've actually seen this now in Kenya, where parts of what we've developed as Connected Farmer are finding applicability in work that the government is trying to do in the ag sector. So I think it's good to keep them informed. I think it's definitely important that they know what's going on. It hasn't been something that we've kind of directly fostered as part of CFA. We've in many ways leveraged the existing relationships that Vodafone had.
Jan from Medway in the UK asked a two-part question. The first is about the commercial benefits, the social benefits of the system are clear to both Vodafone and the participating companies, but he's especially interested in the social impact on the farmers. And perhaps you can mention what you're working with on a line on that one, Mike. The second question is one that I am struggling with, and that is, do you feel it is necessary to have a partnership with a mobile network operator to create such a service, or could something similar be set up using over-the-top systems? Okay, I'm not sure what over-the-top means, but as a USAID ICT advisor, I certainly thought a lot about whether this is a good use of government funds. I consulted a lot with a public-private partnership expert. Vodafone is bringing to the table over $5 million of resources, matching $5 million from USAID. So that was a serious contribution by Vodafone. They were also in agreement that lessons would be learned, they would be open to things like webinars and things like that to participate in, and to work with technical analysts on learning about that. So we decided to go ahead, given their contribution and what we were able to get out of it, and the example that we could show to other mobile network operators. It is a good question and a hard one to know the right answer on, but that's how we came out. So, Mike, would you like to comment on the question of impact on smallholder farmers and anything in addition you'd like to comment on whether this partnership is a good use of public funds?
Great, thanks, Judy. I'll start with the easier one around farmer benefits. So I think for farmers, there's a portfolio of different benefits that we think they're seeing. Part of that is around increased revenues. Some of that is due directly to less fraud from output. So there's a lot of just, and this isn't unique, I don't think, to Kenya or Tanzania, but there's significant fraud within the egg value chains. And that's because a lot of the payments right now are done via cash, and a lot of the records are kept via paper. And so it's very easy for things to disappear. And so we think that by increasing the visibility and transparency in these systems, more of that money is going to get into the pocket of the farmer. And some of our early indicators, some of the early assessments we've done, have said that's very much true. We also see direct decreased transaction costs for farmers. So in some value chains, farmers are actually having to make separate trips to go pick up money. We see this in Tanzania. We have one of our clients, one of our early clients was with Multiflower. They're a flower seed exporter based out of the Netherlands. And the way their business works is farmers would drop off seed, they'd go home, they'd come back later to pick up a first payment, they'd go home, they'd come back later to pick up a second payment. This is over the course of several months. And because we are doing mobile money payments then to these farmers, or mobile money disbursements to these farmers, they didn't have to take those physical trips. So they actually saved money on transportation, and they actually, the security was higher as well. So they weren't had the risk of being robbed during these trips. We also think there's a lot of value around improved visibility into the status and details of delivery and loan and payments. So just knowing where things are in the system, I'm going to get paid. Maybe I haven't gotten paid yet, but there's a payment coming. That's really important to them. It enables people to send farmhands perhaps to go do some of these transactions because the money, instead of going to the farmhand and then trusting that 100% of that money is going to get back to the farmer, the money will go directly to the real farmer's mobile wallet. So we think there's some of our visibility into that as well. And finally, we think that we see that businesses are using the system to actually send more information to farmers. And some of this information is directly related to productivity, so it's information around good agricultural practices. And so sharing more of that information, being able to distribute that content, we think is going to have a real benefit in farmers. And some of this I'm kind of using soft language on, and that's because we haven't done a full-scale evaluation yet, getting back to my line between benefits and implementation. So we've got a firm right now in the country that's going out in the field and looking at the benefits. And so a lot of the early indicators you've seen said these things are true, and what we're going to try to do now over the next couple of weeks is quantify them. And we'll be sharing those out once we have that. And I think that'll be really interesting to be able to really say with some certainty what the value is to the farmers and to the ag businesses. In terms of the use of public funding, you know, I think there's a real value in showing that, in proving business models in this space. But I think a lot of the work in MAB, to date has not proven to be scalable and has not proven to be profitable. And I think it's really hampered MAB, the promise of MAB, it's hampered its ability to reduce the transformation in the sector. And so what we're hoping to do is prove with a report of them that these business models, particularly these B2B models and these transactional models, can be a great way to play in this space and can actually be a hub in many ways to other services that go direct to farmer. So if I think about how we operate, our customers are agribusinesses, but we are registering lots of farmers on these platforms. These agribusinesses are registering farmers on these platforms. And once you have these farmers registered, you can start offering them a range of services. And those services might be content, they might be digital financial services related to agriculture, or they might be other services we haven't even thought of yet. But you can use this as a hub, and then you can bolt on other services to it. And then proving that hub model as well to the broader marketplace becomes really interesting. But then if you have to work with MNO, if you're interested in another market and there's other players that are there that make sense, I think that makes, you know, that can work very well. But I think it's key to having a partner that's really committed to this space, and that's what we've seen in Vodafone. Thank
you. Just to jump in on that question as well, I think from a Vodafone perspective, it's a good question around over the top players. I would add, and maybe I can rephrase the question a little bit to kind of put the point in that Vodafone here is a partner around some of the technology delivery, but I often say technology and new solutions are actually some of the least important parts of getting right. The technology is very simple, and I do think there is a role for different types of players to be delivering these types of solutions and taking kind of the first step at this. I'm sure lots of other players will come into the market and it'll be a vibrant competitive place. So I think what our finding is, and what I always kind of emphasize in any kind of initiative where technology is being used, is to kind of emphasize whether it's kind of M-Peso, whether it's these new solutions or different applications. The hub isn't designing functionality that is A to B. It's about educating that customer about what it does. It's about them building the trust around what that service does. And then being able to do that change management process as people move from one way of doing something to another. So that needs kind of presence on the ground. And I feel that somewhere telcos do add value in terms of the trust in the market, the presence of our retail distribution, increasingly our mobile money distribution, our customer service, and the ongoing customer service we provide with this technology, the frontline support to users to be able to start taking the product and using it. So, yes, lots of different players should play in the market. Doesn't necessarily have to be an MNO, but I'd say it's not just about the technology, it's about the service design wrapped around that and the service support that's given to the end users.
Thanks, Mike and Laura. Another question comes from Melanie from Freedom from Hunger. She says, great to have at least brief mention of the impact on women farmers. Do you have any other comments on the impact of women farmers and how that has fit into the alliance, Mike or Laura?
Yep, so something we think a fair bit about. I think there's two things I would highlight. One is that there's been research that's shown that women have greater control of their mobile money than they do of cash. I can't remember who did this research. I was just talking about this with UN Foundation the other day. They were looking at particularly women business owners. And when women business owners were able to keep assets in mobile money, they were able to invest more in their businesses, which was a kind of a proxy of control of those assets. Whereas women who had most of their assets in cash tended to not have as much control. So I think that's really interesting, and that speaks to the digital payments part, the mobile payments part of what we're doing. There's also something interesting, this is something we've been playing around with a little bit, which is through the system, you can start registering not just a primary farmer, but you can also register a secondary household member into the system. And what we think this is going to be used as, and what we've seen this used as to date, is that men will often own the contract and they'll be the one that register with the business. But if they sign up their wife, that wife could also receive this content then from the agribusiness, the agronomy content, the logistics updates. And since women are doing most of the work, or much of the work in many of these value chains, that's great, because we're trying to overcome that challenge where men will go to the trainings, but women do the work, and so this information you're passing on never actually gets to the person doing the work in the field. So we think that the solution can help address that as well. But it is something we're looking at. It's part of what our evaluators will be looking at for the next couple of weeks is are we able to create real benefits then for women farmers as well?
Jason from Texas Tech asks, I'm interested in hearing more about the structure of the line. In broad terms, what activities, actions, and processes were carried about by USA TechnoServe versus Vodafone? Also in terms of resources, what aspects of the project were paid for with USA resources versus Vodafone's contributions? So I'll start out answering that. As Texas and others may know, USAID has a public-private partnership project called Global Development Alliance. We receive concept papers, influencer forms. We have a broad agency announcement that tells on how to submit a concept paper to propose at least a one-to-one match of resources from a public-private partnership partner to match USAID's resources. Once we get the concept paper, then we also consult with the missions that are involved in the field that would be touched by that idea. And we can then discuss directly with the feedback to the potential partner and then help shape the actual design of the alliance. In this case, we received a concept paper that actually was developed by Vodafone and TechnoServe together. TechnoServe is what we call an implementing partner. It has a bit of matching funds in there, but mostly it is a recipient of the USAID funds to implement the alliance. And TechnoServe is the resource partner along with USAID. So together, Vodafone and TechnoServe drafted the concept paper. We worked with them to hone it to make sure it was aligned with USAID priorities. And in this case, one criteria, of course, was that it was aligned with the future focus countries. So we had to map out where the overlap was between Vodafone country priorities and USAID. Then we put together an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, between all three partners. It's not a legally binding document, but it is reviewed by counsel on all sides. And it defines our joint goals and objectives, how we're measuring success, and who does what in the alliance. Essentially, USAID's money then goes to TechnoServe as a cooperative agreement in this case, and then Vodafone's money is either used internally or goes to TechnoServe. So Mike or Laura can address more on the Vodafone side.
Our priorities of investment are to building out the technology and any cost in running any of the operations, so connectivity, SMS cost for running the trials, so like direct Vodafone style cost.
Great. And TechnoServe has really been the field staff then for the project, the field-facing element. During the startup phase, we did a lot of the climate identification and needs assessment. So we'd go out there and we'd find ag businesses who might be good clients for this. Had a certain number of farmers, sourced directly from farmers, had fairly professional management staff. And then we would conduct a needs assessment with them. So how do you operate something we call a process map in Ireland? How do you source from farmers today? What are the challenges in that engagement with farmers? And then we would look at where could mobile play a part in addressing those challenges. So we would do that. We would feed that back then to Vodafone and their technology team to craft the early pilots of these solutions. And then we would take that back out in the field, and TechnoServer would do the pilots, especially management of the client and user support. So we'd help the client understand how to use the solution, and we'd support them as they're using it and their challenges. TechnoServer would also then do a lot of the development of training materials and delivering that training to the clients, especially during the project phase. And then over the next, I would say, 8 months, a lot of that work is going to get transitioned to Vodafone and to the opcos. So we'll start transitioning a lot of the biz dev work to them, some of the training and capacity work to them, and then the direct user support. And that way, at the end of the project, Vodafone will be playing all roles in this system here. So they will be not only the technology, but they'll also be the client-facing part of it.
Thanks, Mike. I might also add that Vodafone is going to be taking up these capabilities of the Vodafone. This is operating capabilities in the different countries. And one sign that they're serious about that is that they've actually stolen some of my team to have internally to carry on the practice. So it's sort of I think that is totally good news. Mike has to cope with it, but it is a good sign that Vodafone and Safaricom are serious about this. Aaron has a good question from Concern Worldwide in Mozambique. Given where M-Pesa actually stands in Mozambique, he's interested in much has been said, mentioned about Kenya and Tanzania. I'm curious to know what the challenges were in implementing the project on the ground in Mozambique. Mike?
Great, thanks. So Mozambique is obviously a very different market than Tanzania and Kenya. Mobile money is still very nascent there. Footprint coverage is of the actual network is not as high as it is in Tanzania and Kenya. So there are unique challenges in Mozambique. One of them is around identifying clients that are in an area where we have good coverage, and where phone penetration around the populace is high enough, where Vodafone SIM or anyone's SIM penetration is high enough. And that's growing, and that's getting easier day by day. Coverage is expanding pretty quickly. But it is still more of a concern we've seen elsewhere, just kind of basic infrastructure. I think the key one for Mozambique is more around the mobile money side of things, and particularly around liquidity in the field as we think about payments. So if you look at the cotton sector, and the cotton sector is big in Mozambique and is very well organized. So in many ways, it's a good fit for our solution. The cotton sector is great, but the size of the payments they often do are quite large. And if we were to take one of the big cotton firms and move them 100% onto the platform right now, do a big payment, and then every farmer goes to an agent to cash out, the agent network, the liquidity of the system would be under a lot of strain. And so that's one of the areas we need to think about this incentive, this digital ecosystem more holistically, and incentivizing farmers to keep their money digitally. And so I think that's the biggest challenge we've seen in Mozambique. Laura, I don't know if you want to weigh in any more on that.
No, I think we just have kind of the key areas. I would say from a proposition standpoint, the approach that we try to take to the business is try for a market to focus on a few key things and then start building on the services once you're going to build up kind of the first core base. And so from an impressive perspective in Mozambique, given it's been taking a little longer to get off the ground, we haven't wanted to overload too much from a proposition perspective the market. But I think that will increasingly speed up now. Hopefully we'll see more kind of naturally grow in this market.
Thanks, Michael and Laura. And Mozambique, I follow it closely because it's such an important country to USAID, and it's also one of our new alliance IDP extension challenge fund countries. I know that Vodacom does have the challenges and struggles that Laura and Mike have mentioned. It also, though, is moving forward in basic SIM ad services to farmers through a service for the USA project related to postal management. They're going to be implementing a system called
221, from H&I, which is an IVR system for basic ag information as well as coastal flooding information. And that could be starting up very soon. So it's a good sign that they want to move into mobile ag services, even though on the mobile payment side, it's more of a trend. Mark LeClaire from Farm Radio International, who really should be the one to answer this question, but I'll pose it to you guys. He says, using media, that is mass media, to sensitize farmers and agribusinesses to this type of system could be useful. How might radio help promote and create conversation around a connected farm alliance system? And I might add, Mike or Laura could comment on how the mobile network operators have marketed this system.
Great. I'll take a stab at it, and Laura, you can jump in. So most of what we've done to date in terms of marketing the system has been going directly to agribusinesses. TechnoServe has been in many of these markets for a long time in agriculture, so we have a good sense of who plays in this space, who are the big agribusinesses, who are the ones that are pretty well run. And so that's where we've started. One of the things about the system is because our customers are agribusinesses and not farmers, they actually don't have to do as much mass marketing for a connected farmer. Because we identify the agribusiness, we sell the solution to the agribusiness, and they register their farmers as part of their business as usual. So I'd say that's actually been a benefit for us in many respects, is that we're not fighting, like I think it was the trench warfare of that direct-to-farmer systems have to go through, which is trying to get more and more farmers on and that challenge. That said, it's always good to build awareness of what you're doing. Radio is obviously a good channel to do that. So I think as we think about scaling this up over time, certainly something that would be looked at. So I don't know if you want to add any more to that.
I'm aware that there's some great things that Farm Radio is doing with mobile in terms of testing some of the messages kind of broadcasted through mobile, kind of doing a poll in terms of what are useful information that was provided to kind of home messaging or provide a kind of reinforcement messages post kind of episodes. I believe that's happening today. I'm not a spokesperson. So I think different channels are converging broadly to use different channels to reach out to people in the easiest way, and that's kind of very welcome. So I think exploring that is a positive thing for many markets. As Mike said, for this particular product, because we've been working with agribusiness, for this particular one, it hasn't been so much of a top piece to use that as a channel and a format. But I think, as Julie said, we have a kind of a wider portfolio of agricultural services, which we're keen to do, and I'm sure will happen in the market, then absolutely, I think it's a useful extra channel.
Thanks, Laura. I think I'm going to just pose one more question to you, and in advance I'll thank both of you. And I also would like Laura, before we close, to mention the additional market research that Vodafone has funded related to mobile ads. So the question is from Adam of Commissioner in the UK. He says, Mike, the point about making sure partners are honest by incentives is key. You also mentioned that agribusiness can see different value propositions, for example, understanding real-time buying habits, reducing fraud, or just increasing cost efficiencies using digital payment systems. What is the leading incentive and KPI for the agribusiness? Is it the same across different types of agribusinesses?
Great, thanks. It's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer to it, to be honest. We're still trying to figure out exactly what the best or the biggest benefits are to the agribusinesses and what those KPIs are to determine their decision or to drive their decision to invest in a solution like this. I think it's a lot around this transparency and visibility. I think it's a lot around pulling cash out of the system. But as I think Laura said earlier, a lot of these agribusinesses haven't themselves quantified the cost associated with these, the cost of cash, the cost of paper-based systems. One of the things we're going to try to do as part of the evaluation in the next couple of months is try to quantify some of the value of of addressing those challenges to businesses. And we'll obviously be sharing those outcomes as part of our reports. Because I think there is a lot of value. I think that value is real and has hard impact on the ability to run the business. But we're not always sure, and the businesses aren't always sure, the magnitude of that value. And so it's something we're really interested in exploring more.
Laura, do you have a comment on the market research?
No, I think I'd agree with Mike's comments. I think it's something that we need to do more of. And it's something that we also need to work with organizations and how they're prepared to share that data as well, because then you are working in that internally in a company that, you know, that's data for them. So whether that be information you can publicly share, it's going to be a different story or which companies are prepared to. But definitely that journey is continuing to try and measure the, and I say measure it in a slightly light way, in the sense that we do need these statistics, but at the same time, from a commercial product, we cannot necessarily have the same rigor of investment on the monitoring evaluation that ideally some of these products would have, but it's just that such an additional extra cost in terms of even like the product design, the OPEX, the go-to-market, the marketing, that not necessarily the full role of IBM M&O or any other service provider to rigorous monitoring and evaluation as well, to control child, et cetera. But it's definitely something we want to try and continue to see how we can help businesses explore a kind of current baseline for benefits and also for the farmers to make sure that we're capturing that and that's in the service design and the nutritive process and any gaps missed on the product side that could benefit the farmers and the business is being captured and continuing to go into the roadmap of functionality. Because you should probably highlight this is kind of a journey and that's definitely something we want to start to try and commercialize, but we don't see we've kind of got all the answers from the current standing position.
And Judy, if I could just jump in with one other point here, which is I think one of the benefits to these businesses is the data itself. And I think that becomes really exciting in a broader picture, which is basically all this data collected on farmers and transactions. And as a system, how do we monetize and how do we get the most value out of that data and how do you do that responsibly? I think that's one of the big challenges that's coming up in MAG, which is you're going to start seeing a lot of financial data moved onto these systems. You're going to see a lot of very personal data. It has value. It can be used to increase access to finance for farmers. It can be used to store content. It obviously can be used for not great uses either. But I think this whole idea of how we manage mobile data or just data in general on farmers, who owns it, how do we use it most effectively, it's going to be a really interesting challenge that this community is going to be facing over the next couple of years.
Thank you very much, Mike and Laura. This is really just winding up the webinar. I think we'll continue in the chat box if you have additional questions. I did want to mention that there are several questions about knowledge sharing and information performance. We have ICT extension service activity scoring and there's resources in agrilinks.org regarding those. I also write occasional blogs on ICT and in agrilinks. We have a section of agrilinks called ICT and Agriculture. So you can post questions there or you can post them directly to me at jp@usa.gov so that we can keep moving forward on using ICT well within ag development.
Sorry, Judy, I just wanted to add one thing from there's an additional external research report that the Vodafone Foundation is doing on agriculture that will be launched in May. So also for this forum that will be able to come out in the future. It's not available as of today to share, but in the future that directs people to that if they're interested in the topic and work for the friends do.
Great, thank you. I'm looking forward to that. Wonderful. Thank you so much for a great webinar and for all of the insightful questions. Thank you to Judy Payne for facilitating and arranging, and also, of course, to our wonderful speakers, Michael Elliott from TechnoServe and Laura Crowe from Vodafone.